Okay, folks, we are going to resume our meeting, and we are on agenda item number 26. Mr. Briggs?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the agenda notice, we have sort of an odd title. It refers to back flushing settlement, which is a little strange. It's not really what we're talking about. What we're talking about are environmental projects up in the Monterey County area. We are fortunate to have funding available from a settlement, but really the focus is trying to use that that money in a way that is best in terms of water quality. And we have making our presentation this afternoon, Amanda Byrne, and it looks like being assisted by Allison Jones.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Amanda Byrne. I work in the Northern Watershed Unit, and I am the staff person overseeing the PG&E Supplemental Environmental Project Funds. So the fund was approved by this board on July 11th, 2003. The funds were based primarily on two plans, the first of which was the Regional Board Toxic Hotspots Plan, which outlined sources of impairment in the Lower Salinas and the harbor, Moss Landing Harbor. And the second plan is the Monterey Bay Sanctuaries Plan for Agriculture. And the total dollars that were allocated were $2.85 million for projects and $950,000 for water quality monitoring, both associated with the projects and with other projects that are happening from other funding sources in the watersheds. What I wanted to do was take a moment to go over what the Sanctuary's plan for agriculture is. This plan was developed by a large stakeholder group, which included the farm bureaus, the growers, many of the technical assistance agencies, which actually go out and implement these conservation practices on ag lands, which prevent pollution. Before this process was in place, there were dollars that were available to help growers implement practices, but it seemed like that there were blocks to having that done. And so what's important about this plan is that it brought all of these people together to outline a process to ensure that those projects are being implemented. There's a lot of steps that go into implementing a project on a farm, and so this was the process everyone came up with. So the first thing that happens is a watershed coordinator, which is associated with the farm bureaus. They go out, they organize the growers into groups. The watershed coordinator will help the growers attend the farm water quality courses. The farm water quality courses have different topics. Some specialize in vineyards. Others might talk about strawberries. So the coordinator is good about knowing which class and helping the growers get into the correct course. The course itself is taught by the University of California Cooperative Extension and the Natural Resources Conservation Service. During the course, the growers learn about nutrient management, irrigation management, erosion control, pesticides. Staff from our office come and give a presentation on water quality regulations. The growers then fill out a farm water quality plan, which is specific to their land. The coordinators are participating in the course. And one of the things that I wanted to point out is that the plan that the growers are developing is not specific enough for a grower just to take that back to the farm and begin implementing practices. What the farm water quality plan does is introduces the growers to the idea of what conservation practices are and what are available and what things they might be interested in. Upon completion of the course, the coordinators will help ensure that the growers finish their plans. The next step is the coordinators begin to connect the growers with the technical assistance agencies. This box down here, there's a lot of steps that go into actually just implementing a project into the ground. It's a lot of surveying the land, determining what practice is going to be most effective for that particular grower. The final step is what's happening during this process is water quality monitoring, with the end goal being improved water quality. And another point that I want to bring up is that there are At this time, there's two types of monitoring that are occurring. We have the monitoring that's occurring underneath the ag waiver. That monitoring is focused on collecting three types of information. One, it gives us some idea of ambient water quality conditions in stream. The second thing that it does is that it helps us as staff evaluate the effectiveness of the waiver program. The third thing that it does is it helps us to identify potential sources of pollution within a watershed. The second kind of monitoring that's occurring during these is more on-property monitoring, individual monitoring. And that kind of monitoring is important because that's going to provide the grower with individual feedback as to whether or not he or she is actually contributing to water quality impairment, and it also helps them determine if whether or not the conservation practices that they are implementing are actually being effective at preventing pollution. And I bring that up because later in the presentation you'll see that I have two separate projects that are looking at both those types of monitoring.
You know, that's new information, I think, at least for myself. I didn't realize that any individual farms were actually doing individual monitoring. Is that, I mean, we had, what, 50 stations, 25
no,
and 25? And
right. It's not part of the cooperative monitoring program, but when farmers go through these short courses, they do learn how to do self-monitoring to help them evaluate practices. It's generally on a less technical level. The data quality isn't as high. We're not incorporating that into our monitoring.
Okay. Is it submitted to us?
No.
Okay.
There are three projects that I'm bringing to you today that are coming out of the project fund. The first is from the Community Alliance of Family Farms, and they are proposing to install 10 vegetated waterways in the Elkhorn Slough area. The second project is the Agricultural and Land-Based Training Association, and this project is primarily providing funding for Spanish and English-speaking watershed working group coordinators. The third project underneath the project fund is from the Coastal Watershed Council. That project will train growers and some of the new technical assistance staff in how to perform this on-farm water quality monitoring. And all three of these projects are providing individual assistance. The final project is coming out of the monitoring fund, and this project is from the Elkhorn Slough Reserve in cooperation with UC Santa Cruz, and they are providing some regional long-term water quality data. So the first project, as I mentioned, Community Alliance for Family Farms under the direction of Sam Earnshaw. They're going to install 10 vegetated waterways ranging in size from 1,500 to 30,000 square feet. They'll also be educating growers and some of the other technical assistance staff, such as the staff at like the Resource Conservation Districts or the Natural Resource Conservation Service, and how to install and maintain these vegetated waterways. The total amount that they are requesting from us is $200,000 with a 31% cost match. And I put some photographs up here to show you what these look like. The top picture is a before picture. You can see that there's a lot of bare soil and some erosion happening here. And then the bottom shows the extent of the vegetation that they put in here to control that problem. The second project coming out of the project fund is the Agricultural and Land-Based Training Association under the direction of Brett Malone. I'd like to point out in the staff report, I had listed that this project was a three-year project, and it's not. It's a two-year project. It's providing for a full-time Spanish-speaking coordinator for 2 years, a part-time English-speaking coordinator for 2 years. The coordinators will help the growers complete and implement their water quality plans. They're also going to offer sort of these source control workshops, both in English and Spanish. And when I say source control workshops, I'm talking about tailgate meetings. Oftentimes they'll go out to a grower's farm and someone will have implemented an erosion control practice, or maybe someone installed drip irrigation, and so it gives the growers a chance to see what these projects look like on the ground. And the coordinators are the link between the technical assistance agencies and the growers. They are requesting $320,000 with a 26% cost match. And I wanted to point out the importance of the coordinators in this area for management practice implementation. And one is that Monterey County has more irrigated ag lands than all of our other counties within our region combined. However, currently Monterey County is the only county without a coordinator. The coordinators ensure that the farm plans are implemented correctly and in a timely manner. And finally, the coordinator can overcome some of the language and cultural barriers to implementing management practices. The third project is from the Coastal Watershed Council, and this is the project that's going to train growers and technical assistance staff in how to perform on-farm water quality monitoring. This is more for the grower feedback to understand how the activities that they are undertaking are helping water quality. They will create quality assurance, quality control documents for consistent self-monitoring on individual farms. It provides for full-time staff for 2 years to provide bilingual training to an individual grower assistance in this. And it also provides training for technical assistance staff at the Natural Resource Conservation Service and the Resource Conservation Districts. The total amount requested is $180,000 with a 31% cost match. The final project is coming out of the Monitoring Fund. This is from the Elkhorn Slough Reserve. The Elkhorn Slough Reserve for the past 15 years has been collecting water quality data in the Lower Salinas and Elkhorn Slough. A lot of this data has been volunteer monitoring, but it's high quality data. And there hasn't been anyone to organize this data or analyze this data and look for trends. And so what this project does is provide analysis of 15 years of water quality trend data. And I'd like to point out that, you know, this is a really unique opportunity for us. 15 years is a long time, and particularly when we're interested in trying to establish trends, to have access to past data is very helpful. There's also a component which is looking at statistics and improving data analysis and sampling designs to determine management practice effectiveness. It's still somewhat of a new art determining how effective some of these management practices are. A lot of the data that's been collected has been collected in Iowa and in Kentucky, and some of that doesn't always necessarily translate into how effective a particular project might be here in the Central Coast given our crop systems. And then a final component is actually to continue that water quality monitoring for 2 years in coordination with CCAMP and our ag waiver monitoring sites. The amount requested is $170,200 with a 39% cost match.
Just a question on that one,
yes.
Amanda. Have they been analyzing this data at all? Or has it just been accumulating?
My understanding is that it's been accumulating. It's been a volunteer program. I can have the person who is with the reserve is here.
Okay, well, after your presentation.
After presentation, okay.
I thought you might know the answer to that.
Okay. So when I came to you in December, I asked for approval on these four projects. And so they were to provide watershed level trend monitoring, to pay for farm water quality courses, to do some studies and some data analysis associated with cover crop trials, and to provide technical assistance for on-the-ground implementation. And so we're growing. The projects that you see in green are the projects from the previous slide. Those things in yellow, those represent projects that are less than $50,000 and do not require board approval. We've had two projects which have been erosion control projects on farm, two other projects which were sediment control projects, and we've also had some folks come to us and ask for money to do some finer scale sub-watershed level monitoring. And then finally, the words in red, these are the four projects that I'm asking for approval today. And another thing I would like for you to see from the slide is that there's a lot of coordination between these projects and the project proponents. And so, for example, the Coastal Watershed Council, the training for self-monitoring, they're actually coordinating up with the watershed coordinators underneath the ALBA proposal in this grant. There's also a component in the farm water quality class and in the farm water quality plan that talks about training. So the watershed coordinators are sort of acting like a glue to hold all of these projects together and then bring that back to the grower. And so staff seeks board approval to direct funds towards these four projects.
Questions? Mr. Jeffries.
Have you looked at all these individual budgets? I questioned, I believe it was the second task, the Spanish, and the one-and-a-half-time person, and the total amount was $400,000. We're providing $200,000, I believe.
Yes, actually, that reminds me. I noticed
You know, can you tell me what else is involved? Because that seems like a lot of money for just one-and-a-half people for 2 years.
It's one, and it comes out to be 1 3/4 people.
Well, even this two people per, that's, you know, is there renting facilities? Are they car expenses? Have you looked at the budgets?
Yes.
Can you give me a?
I can actually give you the budget. This was left out of the staff report.
Oh, okay. Well, that would probably make more sense. I had thumbed through that looking for that, and I did not see it.
Yes. No, that was
can
missing from the staff report.
Can you put a copy
report.
Of it up on the screen? Do you have a copy to do that?
Yeah.
Do it on that right there.
That. Yeah.
Thank you.
To briefly answer your question, primarily the funds are paying for staff time. And that's the primary. That's the source of most of those dollars, is to pay for staff for 2 years.
For example, why are we paying for two executive directors and a national resources manager?
Oh no, that's the match column. The first column that you see there, those are the funds that are being requested by the applicant.
Okay.
The second column is the total match. So what this is saying is that, for example, the third personnel item down, the executive director of ALBA, that person will be participating in this project, but their time is being used as matched. So our grant is not paying for that person's time.
But is that match based on time devoted to this project?
Yes.
So there's no duplication there in how that time is being allocated.
No.
Is this a two-year?
This is a two-year, yes.
So everything, if you want to find out what's happening per year, you just divide by two.
Exactly. That's right.
See how I figured that out?
I had questions about this project, too, in that, you know, compared to the first one where there's the buffer strips and the third one where they're the course. This one is much less tangible. It's just providing coordinators. So how do we know that this is effective? How do we know that this is helping? Just because it's not measurable, I guess is the problem I have.
Well,
it's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
It's the most expensive one of the whole list.
And I have... If you look at the scope of work, which is in the staff report, for this project, you'll see that I've outlined a lot of deliverables that need to be done. So that the deliverables are what we get back to ensure that work was done. I think in terms of how do we know it's going to be effective, I think I would argue, you know, currently we have about 60% enrollment underneath the Ag Waiver program. A lot of outreach was done by coordinators associated with the farm bureaus. And, you know, Allison and I were talking about this. I don't think we would have 60% enrollment at this time if we had not had coordinators available. The coordinators in the other counties, I think they provided a total of 30 outreach workshops to bring growers in. The plan, the Monterey Bay Sanctuary plan, has been out for about 4 years. About half that plan, at least, has been implemented. So I think in terms of how do we know it's going to be effective, we do have this sort of this past recent history of coordinators helping us get things online.
So is the number of growers in this county, which you mentioned doesn't have a coordinator, is it lower than the other counties?
Do you know the answer to that? I'm going to refer to Allison.
Yeah.
Well, there. No, actually, because there were other people that stepped in, especially under the cooperative monitoring program, I think the gap has been filled in. However, the specifically ALBA did a lot of the outreach leading up to the waiver in Spanish, and that was tremendously helpful in terms of getting information out to growers that are hard for us to reach. So, I think it's valuable from that standpoint.
So if I'm understanding, this ALBA request is only for Salinas Valley only?
Well, correct. It's the lower Salinas and Elkhorn Slough.
Well, what about Pajaro and San Benito County?
Those counties currently have coordinators active in those counties.
So you're saying Monterey County is the only county that does not?
Correct. And Santa Barbara County is being, the coordinator down there is being funded through the Guadalupe funds.
Okay. And how many people do they plan to reach out to with this project?
Well, we've got some numbers in the scope of work that relate to that. They're planning on setting up 5 watershed working groups, and I believe... They've got, they're going to translate a lot of materials, publish at least 1,000 English language and 500 Spanish language copies of materials. They have a minimum number of growers that they're going to do outreach on. I believe it's 600 out of 1,200 in Monterey County. They've also got some numbers in here in terms of, working with at least 60 growers outside of the watershed working groups. They have a minimum of assisting. There is some dollars that are going to be spent towards helping growers implement practices, so it's not just all just the coordinators providing education and outreach to the farmers.
With the money we've already spent and the money you've already spent and what you're asking us to do today, where does that put the settlement funds?
No, I actually have a slide that I can show you that breaks that down a little better.
Okay.
So these are the 8.85 million project fund. We had said that we were going to spend approximately 30% of the funds on education and outreach activities. So that was $1,960,000 total for project implementation and $840,000 for education and outreach. And at the moment, we have $1,356,000 left for on-the-ground implementation of projects and $140,000 for education and outreach activities, which is really what we wanted. I mean, we wanted the outreach to come first. So that's the breakdown of the project funds. And for the monitoring, this is assuming that the board approves the four projects from today.
So this is everything we've done before, things
and
you've
today.
Done, and what we've...
That's right,
so
exactly.
There'll still be something left.
Yes. And for the monitoring funds, 70% were to be spent on watershed level monitoring and 30% on practice effectiveness. And what we have left is $208,000 in the watershed level monitoring and $134,000 left in the practice effectiveness. Again, assuming that you approve the projects today.
Okay. Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah. Maybe you could clarify for me the how it works with the matching fund. I mean, do we just give them the $200,000 and then? I mean, how does that work? They're supposed to come up with certain matching funds. How
Yes.
do we know they come up with those funds?
When they go to bill us, if you look at a copy of their project budget. When it comes time for them to bill, they will bill by the tasks that are outlined in the project, and they will tell us how much matching they have for each project. And then I know what the matching is going to be because they've already outlined it here on the sheet of paper.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned the 70-30 ratio between implementation and outreach/monitoring.
Yes.
What sort of ratio do we have between education and outreach?
We haven't made the distinction between the two.
Yeah, I know. Just
right.
From your looking at these, how would you characterize?
Oh, you're asking me what I...
Yep.
Okay.
Are we doing more one versus the other or the same?
I would say that... It would be about half, it'd be roughly about half between education and the outreach activities. A lot of what the grant with ALBA is some coordination, which would be outreach, and some education. So there's a big section in there where they're going to be holding these, a minimum of these 8 tailgate meetings, and that would be education. And then there were the farm water quality courses that we approved. And then outreach. Some of the other projects have had dollars dedicated to them to do some outreach.
Okay. Any other questions from the board? We do have some speakers we could get to and then come back to staff with some more questions if we have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sam Earnshaw, Brett Malone. Tamara Doan?
Only if there's questions.
Okay.
Community Alliance with Penn.
Okay. I actually have a question about that project.
Okay. Why don't you come up, Mr. Earnshaw?
Bruce?
Hi, Sam. The vegetated waterways, I wanted to find out sort of, is that on... sort of public lands those will be put into, or is that the lands owned by the farmer? Will it be sort of temporary things that could be torn out in a few years and replaced with something else, or it will be, you know, semi-permanent, or sort of that aspect of
okay.
the project?
We plan to put these on farms, so it's not public lands. Mm-hmm. It's if you remember the picture that was up there, which is a really good example of what we've been doing for the past 5 or 6 years is this is actually on the Gizditch Ranch in Watsonville, but That's a swale that diagonally goes through this newly planted orchard that they had, and the farmer there was talking about getting a backhoe in and putting a steel pipe in. And we went out with Rich Casal from the NRCS and talked to the farmer and explained some of the advantages that these grassed waterways can do. And so he agreed to, instead of spending $30,000 on this pipe, to go ahead and try these grasses. Well, they've just worked miraculously. He's just a great advocate of biological practices and how they work. And this, it really is... been good for me to see too, because we planted creeping wild rye and some rushes and sedges and other things, and just the year after it was planted in January, there was this huge storm and the water comes down the road, turns right, and just cuts right through this field, and all those grasses that you see on the bottom right just kind of laid down. They slowed the flow, sediments were dropping out. We came the next day and it was just like it looks right there. So I mean, these practices really work. And the amount of soil that's kept out of the system, as you can see up there, it's a tremendous amount of soil goes in these, especially when you get the gullying. So the answer to your question is we find farms where they have this kind of an issue, and most farms do, as you know, and then we go in and plant these grasses and different kinds of plants. Hedgerows also can help it on the side of gullies, and... they seem to be very effective in, and it's permanent. These are perennial plants here, and so they're not going to take them out. It's in their interest, and it also kind of goes hand in hand with the whole waiver situation that they're in. So, did I answer your question,
yeah,
Bruce?
Yeah, that's good to hear. Because I know rye is sometimes used for the sort of temporary fix.
Rye,
and I didn't want to do that.
Or, yeah. Barley or rye are used as on roads and things like that, but no, these are permanent. And one number that I've learned from Rich Casal that is really helpful is that if you have an acre of bare land, like that land on the left, and there's erosion off of that, the thickness of one thin dime, that's 15 tons of soil that's going into the waterway. So you can see on something like that, there's quite a lot of... As a matter of fact, we estimated 35 tons of soil was going into the system off of that one erosion gully right there. And right now with that, there's very little. So,
okay, good. Thank you, Sam.
Yes,
does this
welcome.
Practice, let me ask you this. Is it, are farmers that do row crops interested in utilizing something like this?
Very much so. There was another slide we had, but... Like in the Salinas Valley, for example, where you have a roadway, a lot of times next to the roadway there'll be a drainage area, a ditch, and that's in row crop situations, and those are places where we're putting grasses in. This creeping wild rye is very effective there. So, yes, it's not only orchards, it's all kinds of situations, but obviously this was special because it went right through the middle of his orchard, but in a row crop situation it's off to the sides. And also vegetating the roads. Like, there's some really interesting things with perennial vegetation, clovers. There's some grasses that farmers are experimenting with that are all year stuff. They'll put it out there and they dry down a little bit in the summertime, but then it's there in the winter. And this is some really exciting new, you know, things working with vegetation to solve these problems. Does that?
Yes, it does. Thank you very
You're
much.
Welcome.
Gary.
Yeah, do the farmers contribute at all in as far as money goes?
Yes, they do. What they contribute is the labor a lot of times. Like on this one, for example, they helped with the planting, and then they helped with the irrigation. And in every situation, it's different. And setting up the irrigation systems and maintaining, although we're going to help with monitor and help with some of the maintenance, there is the farmer's very involved in these projects.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Another thing, too, is just to mention is that the excitement that these people feel from this is it radiates, you know, and you hear them talking about it, and other farmers see these things. And so right now, I've seen a really lot of interest in this. People, you know, they're really starting to think these things work. And, I mean, this one's right on the road. Everybody knows Vince Gizdich. He tells everybody about this. And so it's some pretty exciting stuff, I think.
So do you think farmers will start putting these in themselves, or are they just going to wait for...
I think they will. They're actually very cost effective. You can buy seed for an acre of this perennial grass, say, for $500. Mm-hmm. You know, if you did plugs, it's more than that. It would be maybe a couple thousand dollars. But seed works. You can throw the seed out there in the fall and make sure that it doesn't wash away, and then in the spring the weeds will come up. They come out and knock the weeds down, and there's the grasses underneath them because they germinate in the wintertime. So, yes, they will do it because it's working, and you know they're being required to address these issues. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I think so.
So do you sort of see this as a something that other farmers can come and look at?
Very definitely, yeah. Okay. And we're putting in our project, we're putting on four workshops, and the way we generally do workshops is we'll have a morning session with some presentations with slides and stuff like that, and then we'll go out in the field in the afternoon and go visit some of these sites. And mm-hmm. every farmer that I've worked with has always wanted to have people come look at it. It's kind okay. of very nice. So,
are these two photos of the same?
That's the exact same area.
How come I see a barn in one and
I don't see the barn in the other?
Farther
back. If you look at the mountains in the back, and there's at the farm, I'm standing farther down this gully on the left, but that's the exact same swale that goes right through. And the bottom slide, he has a cover crop between the plants. They're young plants, but if you look at it carefully, it is the same. If you look right in the center where this ditch goes down into a... thank you, Amanda. At the bottom, there's a little pond-like place where it runs into, and that's right there. My hand will stay steady right there. But yes, it's the exact same gully, just taken farther down.
Allison, is this the BMP already noted in...
Yes.
What you're doing?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's one of the options that people consider when they're looking at making their farm plans.
Okay. All right. Any more questions?
Yeah, I have a question maybe for Lori. I'm not sure. That sort of something pops up for me, a little red flag on using public funds to improve private property. And I just wonder if that's an issue.
There's a requirement in our MOU with the foundation that no individual benefit from the funds, and the way the foundation ensures that that requirement is met is that the funds are given to these nonprofits who do these sorts of BMPs as part of larger programs. But that's always been the intent for the settlement money for the BMPs, is that they have to be installed somewhere, and the obvious place is on working farms.
Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Brett Malone, did you have...
Yeah, I'm also available for questions.
Okay, anyone have any questions for Mr. Malone?
This was the ALBA.
The ALBA project.
Well, I think my question is that, you know, as I stated at the beginning, that the amount that you're asking for 2 years for the type of work, I just didn't see the justification just for 1.5 or 1.75, and that's why I was asking, do we have a budget that justifies all those dollars?
Right. Did you get a copy of the budget?
I did, yes. And
so you'll see that about, I think it's $235,000 represents strictly.
Yeah, $192,000. I see that. And this is for 2 years. I understand that.
Right. So $235,000 is personnel, and the remaining is, you know, everything else that would go along with occupancy and postage and telephone and limited travel in the area to support the staff.
Why the significant difference in pay between the two coordinators? I mean, they're getting paid almost the same amount total, but you know, one is making considerably more than the other one.
Right, it has to do with the costs. And maybe, I don't know, Don, if you could speak to that.
One's getting about $30 an hour, and the other one's getting about $22 an hour. And that's
it's about $8 an hour difference.
Yeah.
It has to do with the organizational costs as well.
Organizational costs?
The difference, right, because one is going to be a contract, a subcontract. ALBA would be the primary recipient, and there would be a subcontract with the coalition for that position.
And then do you take an administrative cost of that?
We probably will, and that has yet to be negotiated for managing the overall agreement.
Well, one of my problems is, and just brought up another issue, is dilution of the dollars working for what we really wanted to do. And then you as an organization providing an application for this type of money, and then you're going to subcontract out some of it and then take an administration cost on, it's normal way of doing business, but these are limited settlement monies, and we want to make sure that every dollar is utilized to the utmost.
Yeah, there's $42,000 of overhead down at page 2.
Yeah, I saw that.
Right, and I definitely share your concerns, and I think one of the one of the things I can do to help you understand the value of the project is because there are two organizations that work with different constituencies coming together. The Spanish-speaking farmer community that ALBA focuses on has traditionally been not had access to the resources that English-speaking farmers have, and so we're coming together to build bridges between these two communities, and I think that does have a cost, obviously, an administrative cost, but we want to keep that at a minimum, so we're going to be conducting extensive outreach.
Yeah, your cost is 15%.
So let me understand this. You're putting on a 15% overhead, and then the coalition is going to put on their overhead on top of your overhead? Is that because that's the difference, reason that the coalition coordinator is that much more expensive than the ALBA coordinator?
Well, I think it, I don't know, Don, if you could speak to this. Because it has to do with the cost for the organization that is employing the individual.
Certainly. I'm Don Mathis with the Central Coast Ag Water Quality Coalition. We hire coordinators to work in each of the counties to conduct outreach for watershed working groups. Our coordinators are all primarily independent contractors, which means that their hourly rate is slightly higher than the hourly rate of an employee for an organization. That's why you see slightly higher hourly rate for ours. But in terms of the coalition budget in this proposal, we don't have an overhead tacked on. Your 15% administrative line item is pretty standard, and you're awarding that in most, if not all, of the proposals thus far.
And the ALBA coordinators are not contract positions?
No, they're not. They're employee positions.
Okay. If the coalition coordinator positions are independent contractors, why are they getting $10 an hour in benefits?
I don't have a copy of that budget next to me at the moment. Shoot, it was over there.
10:35 an hour.
Yeah.
I think that what we do is we roll in an hourly rate and then add on an amount for their assessment of their own benefits.
But you said that that the $29 was already.
This is a result. Okay, I see. I'm reviewing the budget right now. So $25.65 is the per hour. We don't pay that per hour. We pay closer to $40 an hour, which incorporates their overall cost, because this was a budget form that we had to sort of adhere to. We don't pay a benefit. We give them more money, which equates to the cost that it costs them to pay for their benefits and et cetera. But our costs are closer to $40 an hour for our coordinators, which is significantly higher than the $28 an hour for ALBA's coordinator. And what you see is the result of that is that the coalition coordinator ends up working less time, so it's not a full-time position. It's a quarter-time position. So the rate per hour is higher, and what we found is that though the rate per hour is higher, the productivity per hour is also higher, luckily.
Another thing that I'd like to point out is that the costs that they're asking for here are reasonable in comparison to what we've paid other coordinators. So, for example, the coordinator in Santa Barbara County is actually paid more than either one of these. So the amount that they're asking for per year is not anything that's above and beyond what we've seen.
Well, you're talking about the water quality coordinator, or are you talking about the watershed coordinator?
I'm talking about the watershed coordinator in Santa Barbara County.
Okay. Are they doing like work?
Similar work, yes.
The watershed coordinator in Santa Barbara County, her scope of work was directly based on the scope of work for the coalition coordinators in the northern unit. So we worked closely with the southern coalition to develop the proposal and associated costs for the Guadalupe Fund a year and a half or so ago. Very comparable work, to answer your question.
Any other questions from the board? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's see. Our next card is this Tamara Doan?
Tamara.
Okay.
Good afternoon. My name is Tamara Doan. I'm the program director for the Coastal Watershed Council. I'll be happy to answer anyone's questions in regards to our proposal.
Okay. Bruce.
On the staff report on your proposal, it mentions under item number 2 there, data were reported from 20 farms, and the question I have is, who will that be reported to?
Reported?
Yeah. For the staff report there, item 2 talks about measurable results include
okay.
1
okay.
and 2. And two.
Sure.
Says,
so just in brief, the proposal itself is to do a series of trainings for people from the agricultural community and also the technical assistance community in the North Monterey County area in the project area specified by this grant proposal. The trainings themselves, the workshops that they would be very technically oriented in specific monitoring protocols, actually how to do it, kit in your hand, an actual training opportunity. Then there would be quality assurance steps, quality assurance protocols, in addition to actually formalizing a quality assurance program plan for an operation that wanted to do monitoring, and then data management, storage, and delivery. So there's kind of three really basic elements that make for a really good monitoring program. The majority of the money, over 60% of the resources of our proposal, is actually asking for a field technician. And so the limiting factor for us is that field technician. We want to actually go out to Farmer X's land, work with him, look at his land, where is tailwater leaving his land, where should he monitor. So the limiting factor in that element, the 20 farms, is really about limiting the number of hours that our farm field technician would have to go out. So more than 20 people could attend the trainings, but it would be, the possibility that we might do another one, we wanted to really kind of put a limit on it because we would not be able to do, if we had 100 people come to the workshops, we would not be able to have the field time in this budget.
I understand all that. The question is, it mentions here that data will be reported from 20 farms, and the question is, who will that data be reported to? Will it be reported to the Santa Cruz Sentinel, or will it be reported to the regional
right.
board?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Or is it going to be kept by you and not shown to anyone?
Right. The final training, the final element of it is data management and delivery, and our goal is to provide to any operator kind of a seamless transfer or upload form to the regional board's database.
Okay, so data from these 20 farms
right.
will be reported to the regional
so
board.
So as they work, they have an obligation. So mm-hmm. this program, this project does not do monitoring.
Mm-hmm.
So it does training for people to do monitoring, and we're going to give them the tools. So they will be able to report directly under obligations under their farm water quality plan that they have, if they're going to do monitoring, that they have to report that data. So we're giving them a seamless tool directly to the CCAMP database here in Region 3.
Okay. Thanks, Tamara.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else?
I don't have a question for you specifically. It's more to the staff. Have you looked at all these projects and see if there's any duplication of effort? And because you hear a lot of training, and I know that it sounds like they're different, but yet they sound like they're the same. And how does all this training coordinate with the UC extension that the farmers go through, the 15 hours of training? and education, and how does this, all these projects fit within that?
Okay. Well, first, you're correct in assessing that there's a lot, it seems like that there's a lot of overlap, and that's actually what we want, but there's not overlap in terms of we're not paying people to do things twice. So that's not happening, and that's my job as overseeing the funds to make sure that that doesn't happen. And so I guess maybe the best way for me to answer your question is to kind of come back to the slide. A lot of what will happen is an example might be the Spanish-speaking coordinator for ALBA. They work with the cooperative extension folks to put on a Spanish-speaking course. So the people that are teaching the course at Cooperative Extension, they're going to be spending time on the course in terms of pulling materials together, having the materials printed in Spanish, organizing the effort. The coordinator will spend time actually getting the growers to come to the class, the time that the coordinator spends helping the growers fill out the form in the class, and that type of thing. So am I answering your question?
Well, you're answering my question, and it brings another question. Where's the quality assurance that the dollars are being spent are actually benefiting the people that we want it to benefit? And the end results is what this board wants to see and the staff wants to see, that they are trained. And how do we know that the information is being put out, the classes are being given, are the proper information, the proper classes? The end results, how do we measure those against the dollars that we're expending?
I think in terms of how do we know that this is the best effort?
Is it going to take 10 years to see the results of it?
10 years.
Do you understand what I'm driving
at? I understand what you're getting at. You want to make sure that the dollars are precious and that they're spent on quality products and that we know that we're getting value for our money.
That's right.
And I appreciate that. Through the waiver, we're asking the growers to report back to us on what practices they are implementing. So we have this mechanism through a regulatory process where they're reporting back to us and telling us these are the projects that are being implemented on our farms. So, and that's something that we're tracking here in the office. I think in terms of how do we know that the projects are getting done, a lot of the scope of work that were at the attachments in here, there's a lot of language written in here about things that we all call, it's kind of contract language lingo, and we call it deliverables. And so, for example, with Sam's project and the vegetative waterways, right, Sam will have to report back to me on, he'll show me pictures, he'll have his design plans that he did, and we'll know that that's done. With the coordinators, the types of...
That type of project's easy to see.
Exactly. That's right. I wanted to start out easy. With the coordinators, the types of things that we get back are things like, for example, they're going to host these tailgate meetings. They will have to show me, they have to do a minimum number of announcements out to the public through either radio or the newspaper and so on and so forth. They have to provide copies of those. They have to provide us with copies of the course itself, what the outline of the course is like. To be honest, with a lot of these kinds of things, staff from our office is attending. You know, sometimes we come to these things just for us to learn. So on that end, we know that things are occurring. And then I think, finally, like I said, the Monterey Bay Sanctuary Program has been, the plan came out in 1999. And since that time,
there's been a lot that's happened. A lot of projects have gone in the ground. We've seen a lot of effort in that way. I mean, the simple fact that we have all of these organizations cropping up to do the work is an indication that there is people are asking for it. You know, you heard Sam speak earlier that there's interest now. You know, the farmers are hearing about this kind of stuff. The technical assistance agencies, their concern right now is actually not... how are we going to do outreach anymore? The technical assistance agencies are, how are we going to meet the needs of this program? You know, so I think in terms of how do we know that this process is working, for the past 4 or 5 years we've been watching it work, and we see the technical assistance people more and more busy. And then also through the Ag Waiver Program, we have the water quality monitoring. And the water quality monitoring data will let us know, is water quality improving? And that's another form of feedback in terms of, are these projects being implemented on the ground and are they affecting water quality in a positive way?
But I think, to follow up, I mean, it indeed may happen that the water quality may get fixed and be where we want it to be. But we've got so many programs going on here, it's difficult to disambiguate whether it's, you know, this one that's made it better or that one that's made it better or, you know, because they're all out there and they all could be helping to fix this problem. And maybe, you know, maybe it's this one and this one is doing most of the benefit and that one isn't doing much. In fact, the other one may be completely useless. And yet there's so much going on with so much coordination and interconnection that it's difficult to point out one and say this is better, that's better. And some of the statistics you're gathering in terms of, you know, how many courses are given and how many people showed up and how many contacts were made. I mean, you can go to a Farm Bureau meeting and contact 60 growers right there easily. And yet that probably might not have any effect, just going around saying, hi, how are you? That's making contact, but it probably isn't fixing anything. So the question still is, you know, at the end of the day, how can we learn from what we're doing and know which kind of programs are the best ones to do and which ones are less effective? Because it's complicated.
Well, it's very complicated, actually. And that's why we have a staff person, myself, whose job is to do this. I think the other thing I want to come back to a little bit is this effort. It's not just me that's engaged in all of this, right? This is a huge stakeholder effort. And so if you take a step back, from our perspective, you know, we're not so much worried about trying to determine which program is more effective. We just want to make sure that all of them are effective, right? And all of these people have to work together to get things done. And so I think one thing we have to be careful about is thinking, you know, down here, the technical assistance people, right? They're the ones that go out there and implement these projects on the ground, right? We had the hydrologist from the RCD. He goes out there and makes the specs. That person is important, but without the coordinator, then there's not contact between the growers that's made. Without the growers attending the farm water quality class, they don't know what their options are. Without cooperative extension, the class isn't taught. So all of these people, the reason that this whole process came into being was because all these agencies already existed, but they were finding that they still quite weren't getting projects in the ground. And a lot of that is because of all of these steps. You have to have different people take on certain elements. In terms of the PG&E fund, I think that I've tried very hard through the scope of works that I've created to make deliverables as solid as possible, right? And that's why with the coordinator project, I have things like you will provide proof that you have translated these documents into Spanish. You will provide the announcements for all the courses that you have attended. You will provide me with the total number of people who have attended these courses. You will have a minimum, you'll do outreach to a minimum number of people, and you'll ensure that a minimum number of people will attend the courses. You will provide follow-up to the growers for a minimum number to make sure that they make contact with some of these RCD folks.
Are you going to know how much contact is made? Is that something information?
That's actually one of the part of what the grant with the coordinators is going to do is they're going to spend a little time talking with the technical assistance agency, coming up with a very specific referral process so that it doesn't end up being a situation where a grower is, or a coordinator is working with a grower, the coordinator refers the grower to the RCD, then they come up with a way to track, okay, how many growers did we send to the RCD? You know, who sent them? Are their needs being met? Is there contact? Are there projects going into the ground?
Yeah, and how many? I think maybe if we had some specific information coming back from all of these contacts between people, that there would be something more to get our hands on and at least gauge the effort. I mean, you're right. Ultimately, if water quality improves, somehow all of this was involved with that process, and we may never know exactly which component it was. But I think if we knew how many times that were coordinators involved in actually finishing plans and whether the technical assistance that was offered actually resulted in BMPs or, you know, management changes to the way the farms are operating, that might be
that
a measure of success.
But the most important thing is, would the person have made it to the RCD if they hadn't been directed? They may. I mean, I would imagine most farmers know about the RCD and the NRCS. And
well,
so
you know, a lot of these
is having a coordinator necessarily productive? I mean, it may be helpful, but
we're not going
to know.
There's going to be a lot of unknown, unanswered questions, and I think what we're trying to do is try to make sure that this program succeeds, and we may be loading it up with things, but you know, we want it to succeed, and so maybe it's.
I mean, I'm definitely going to vote for this. I'm not arguing
right
with that. I'm just saying that.
I understand.
I'm hoping we can learn from doing this program so we can be more effective as we go forward.
Well, I think one of my concerns is once these dollars are gone, then we have no other dollars to assist anybody. And if we don't get the results that we're expecting from the dollars that we're expending, then it's going to be very difficult to do anything in the future. But yet, the mandate is out there that they accomplish these things regardless of if they have the dollars from us or not.
I guess I have two comments to sort of address combination of Mr. Young and Mr. Jeffries' questions and comments. The first thing is, if the board would like, I can come back in a year and tell you what kind of progress we've made with the coordinators. I think in terms of do we know that the coordinators, the activities of the coordinators result in an increased BMP implementation. I don't know that we've tracked that officially. I think there's some language in the scope of work in their contract that talks about providing follow-up and tracking follow-up and those kinds of things that you were asking about earlier. That's actually what they sent to me in their scope of work. So we will be collecting that kind of information. But I guess the only way that I know how to answer your question is to say that based on what we've seen in the past with the coordinators and grower outreach, I still kind of come back to this idea of I don't think we would have 60% enrollment if it hadn't been for the outreach efforts by the coordinators.
But the point is, you never know unless you have a control. You have some county where you don't have any coordinators, and that county does worse than the ones that do. And of course, we don't want to do that because we want that county to do well too. So it's unfortunate that we won't ever really know.
I don't disagree with you,
Mr. Chair. Then I not to belabor this, I would move the staff's recommendation.
Okay. Second.
Any other questions by the board? You know, we had one more speaker card.
Nope.
And that's Kirsten Weissen. Did you want to address us? Okay.
I'll hold my motion then. Maybe she'll change my motion.
Yeah, maybe I'd better remain silent. I just wanted to answer your question about the data accumulating. Are the data just accumulating?
Right.
Have we not analyzed them? So I just wanted the opportunity to answer that. So we have this 15-year data set at 24 stations, and I've carried out probably 100 hours of analyses on these data, and it's easy to do spatially. So I can tell you that some of our stations in the lower Salinas and Morococo have nitrate levels equivalent to septic tank effluent that the organisms there are experiencing, while other stations in the main channel of the slough have very low nitrate levels. For instance, it's very easy, given my statistical background, to do that kind of analysis of how station X versus station Y. The challenge comes in understanding the long-term trends over time. If I just carry out a simple regression of let's plot time on the x-axis and nitrates or dissolved oxygen or whatever the parameter is on the y, it's just a big smear. There are no trends in a simple analysis like that of watershed level water quality. However, if you can get into a complex geospatial model and take into account the weather, well, first of all, the spatial, the soil type, the slope, the crop type being grown in different periods, and then if you can take into account weather, El Nino years versus La Nina, rainfall, and so on, then I bet there will be some really interesting signals that show up from behind that noise. And this is exactly the sort of information that CCAMP needs is, and other agencies are asking for, is how do we detect signal from noise? And we've got those data, but it's beyond my abilities statistically, the kind of modeling you need to account for weather and all this. It's beyond my abilities to understand the land use processes, the agriculture. I work for the Elkhorn Slough National Estuarine Research Reserve, which is a network of estuarine reserves, and most of my time goes into focusing on invertebrates and fish and so on. And so what we're asking for these funds for is to hire somebody with the time, but also especially the statistical skills and the knowledge of agricultural land use practices in the watershed to really be able to make sense of these temporal trends over time. But they're not just gathering dust. And in fact, we make our data available to anyone on request, and we've had over 100 requests where we send out the data, and people have been using them. So they've been accumulating, but we can do more with them with funding.
Good. Okay, thank you. All right, we have a motion. Was there a second?
Yes, I'll
second.
There
was. Okay. And we have no changes to the recommendation, right? Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
We had a visitor here for this item who chose not to say anything. And he's a former regional board member and therefore a volunteer in the efforts of water quality at Sig Christiansen. Sig, why don't you stand up at least and make yourself known? Oh, I guess I made you known. Speaking of money, Sig, when you left the last board meeting, when you remember, I think you skipped out on the coffee fund, so it's still open and available if you'd like to chip in.
Yeah, he was commenting on our new digs here, and I said, well, we could afford it after he left.
Good to see you, Sig. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Should we do public comment?